Okay, now today is Tuesday. We are going to have about 1 hour discussion on a particular topic that we have already selected. But anyway, if anyone is having other topics or other questions or other kamatan suddhakiri, we can take a few minutes. And later that we are going to go to the Dvaitanupassana Sutta in Sutta Nipata, Mahavagga. Are you available?
Yes, Bhante Tirwan Sarnai. We have two reports today.
Yeah.
The first one, Most Venerable Thero, I am 7 years old, Sihindu Imandiv from California. I started to practice meditation and look for breathing over 20 to 30 minutes. Day one, I feel when I take a breath in, it cools my body when I breathe out, warm air comes out from the nose. Day two, when breathing in, it brings air to my throat and to my chest, and also it brings air halfway to the mouth and some to my stomach and stops. Day three, when I take a deep breath, most air goes through my throat to my stomach and feels cool. Some air goes to the chest too. The air coming out from my chest and nose is warm, and it hits my foot, makes me cool again. Kindly guide me further for meditation. Sinindi. At the end of the report.
So I'm happy that a 7-year-old child is participating. It's a dream it was. And when she is writing the report, she has to write what is the best session, and that would do, rather than writing one day, first day, second day, third day, like. And whatever it may be, she got the idea. When you are sitting, the attention must go to the breath. And furtherance, she says, this is in breath, it is like that, and the expansion, long, and the out breath is relaxation. And how much the body is contributing, the chest or the stomach kind of thing. All these things are good. But as far as you know where to pay the attention, what is the focal point, so much so you are improving. More number of breath means more quantitative development of the mindfulness. More comparison between the in-breath, out-breath means qualitative development. So both the doors are open. So if you practice continuously, definitely you can see your own progress. So appreciating the first report, we are going to the second.
But the second report, most respected Bhante, sitting. Primary objective is rising and falling, but more prominent are vibrations. I focus on the vibrations. This tendentially has a calming, relaxing effect. My feeling towards the vibration is neutral. I stay as closely as I can to the vibration. If it leads to tension, because it's all getting very fast, I step back a bit in order not to get thrown out of the process. Going just so far into the current as not to get flushed away by it, I avoid hitting the wall. I now more often perceive something else beyond the vibrations, or I can perceive it through the gaps. It is a space and I can't see boundaries. It is absolutely calm there, but I myself don't feel calm for long when I concentrate on it. I start feeling very disorientated. It's difficult to remain there. There's nothing I can hold on to. Then perception goes back to the vibration, or thinking takes over. Sometimes I become aware that this space actually occupies the bigger part of the picture, but that I don't pay attention to it and am more aware of the vibration because they are more obvious than the white, calm space. They are easier to perceive. I now try to give less attention to the vibration and to become more often aware of that calm space, even if I can't stay long there. This activity also helps me to stay conscious and interested, but anyway, there is much unconsciousness, but much less thinking than in the many months before. I'm not sure what I should be doing. If I do nothing, I easily get into unconscious state. While if I somehow try to push the wall, the boundary of perception a little bit further, this activity helps me to stay conscious. What I mean, when I just experiencing, observing passively unconsciousness more easily sets in. But if I am more active, for instance, by trying to find a way to be more often aware of that space, I feel that I am manipulating the situation. This suspected Bhante. Can you comment and advise? Thank you. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
So I would like to reduce to the micro message to 2 points. One thing is, when you're observing an object, at the beginning it appears like very gross. That means in-breath, out-breath, bimodal. But when it becomes subtle, it becomes a vibration. There are no modules. It has become a flattening off. And ultimately, once it flat off, there are no boundaries. Everything is a vibration. So that is the first point. So you have presented them not in an orderly manner. I hope after listening to me, you can see. And the second thing is, vibration onward, you must be sitting without, unpropped by a wall or something like that. Then only you can use your whole body for the experience. But if you are leaning against, you are disturbing the natural vibration. So therefore, sit in a situation, keep the upper part of the body erect, and just try to experience how the body is disappearing its boundaries. If you are leaning against, you are again reintroducing boundaries against the wall. So therefore, it is a time for you to go to the sitting upright without leaning against. Soon you will organize your meditation and the grammar will come into your presentation and you will entertain more relaxed. We are moving to the third report.
There's no more reports, Bhante, that's all. Thank you so much.
Okay. So that we have taken a few minutes, but anyway, it's worth. And now we are going to go to Dvaitanupassana Sutta. So I would like to invite Venerable Buddharakhita Bhante to introduce this week's topic.
Yes. So this week we are discussing the 15th dyad in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta, which is the end of the third great chapter. It's the 12th sutta in the collection of the third great chapter from the Sutta Nipada. And so this is the translation by Bhikkhu Bodhi. If bhikkhus, there are those who could there, if bhikkhus, there are those who ask, could there be one contemplation of the dyad, could there be correct contemplation of the dyads in some other way? You should answer them thus, there could be. And how could there be? In this world, bhikkhus, with its devas, Mara and Brahma, amongst this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, its devas and humans, that which is regarded as this is true, the noble ones have seen it well with correct wisdom thus, this is false. This is one contemplation. In this world, bhikkhus, with its devas, maras and Brahma, amongst this population, with its ascetics and Brahmins, in its devas and humans, that which is regarded as this is false, the noble ones have seen it well with correct wisdom thus, this is true. This is a second contemplation. When a bhikkhu dwells thus, heedful, ardent and resolute, one of two fruits is to be expected of him, either final knowledge in this very life, or if there is a residue remaining, the state of non-returning. This is what the Blessed One said. Having said this, the Fortunate One, the Teacher, further said this. Behold, the world, together with its devas, conceiving a self in what is non-self, settling upon name and form, they conceive, this is true. In whatever way they conceive it, it turns out otherwise. This indeed is its falsity, for the transient is of a false nature. Nibbana is of a non-false nature, that the noble ones know as true. Through the breakthrough to truth, hungerless, they are fully quenched. So again, another extraordinary topic that the Buddha introduces into this sutta, which is upon... So this is on the nature of truth and falsity. And I must say, in my own spiritual life, I've had a deep quest around this whole crux of truth and falsity. I wasn't born into a Buddhist family or community or culture or country. There were no Buddhist books when I was a young, child. So it was really through a search for truth that I came to find Buddhism. And it was a long trail, across many countries, continents, many, many different spiritual teachers, many blind alleys and so forth. So, but it has been a constant theme in my life, is a kind of a search for truth and a discernment of what truth and falsity is. And in this present time, particularly, I suppose, in this last year, we've had a raging battle on the social stage, on the media stage, around what is truth and what is falsity. So it becomes a life and death problem, actually, and it can also become what tears apart, nations and people and everything, where we have this internal discussion or the debate or argument around what is truth and what is false. I was quite struck recently that the founder of Fox News, who is a guy called Rupert Murdoch, he's an Australian, but he lives in America. He stated last November that that the purpose of Fox was not to tell truth, it was to entertain. And that when people tune into Fox News, they should understand that it is entertainment, it is not news. So news is not news, it's entertainment. And so, for instance, one of his hosts, a guy called Tucker Carlson, was prosecuted in court, and the judge assessed that a reasonable person should understand that when Tucker says outrageous statements, that they're not statements of truth. They are statements of entertainment. And just in case you think that this is a problem with Fox News, similarly, a CNN reporter called Rachel Maddow was also, before the time of Tucker Carlson's visit to court, also assessed by a judge as not lying. She was just entertaining in her news show. So we should understand, and understand well, that news is not news, and lies are not lies. It's just entertainment. And it's very interesting how people are attracted to lies and falsity, because in a weird way it is entertaining, and we like that. So we don't really like news. We don't really like truth. We don't really like falsity. We like lies. We like entertaining mistruths. We like gossip. And a famous writer, Jonathan Swift, he wrote a famous book called Gulliver's Travels. He was quite satirical. And he said that, lies spread faster than truth. So we should understand that the nature of truth is hard to find. That it's much more entertaining to have falsity. So we should understand when the Buddha says here that bhikkhus, with its devas, maras, and brahmas, amongst the population with its ascetics and brahmins, its devas and humans, that which is regarded, this is true, the noble ones see it well, with correct wisdom thus, this is false. So just as I mentioned earlier on, we should be careful around things called news. We should understand that, in fact, it is false and it is entertaining. Now, I'm not asking you to be a paranoid skeptic about everything. I'm just asking you to be more circumspect, or just ask what would a reasonable person think about some statements. And we have to have our own internal circumspection. So, you know, it was actually very uplifting for me to listen to the report this morning from the seven-year-old who was just talking about the immediacy and the direct touch with the breath. Because for me, this was, you know, it's always a ground reality, a ground truth in any situation, is I always have the breath to go back to. And I can always go, you know, even if ideas or if thinking or something like that is entertaining, I always have the breath as a ground truth and a ground reality to return to. And this becomes like a companion. And it creates this space for circumspection or reflection or more mature consideration to arise. So I can see things as entertaining, or I can, you know, see them as a sort of a falsity in nature and go back to my own business of guarding the breath. So this is a great relief and very practical. So here the Buddha is not asking us to be paranoid skeptic and, you know, just constantly fighting with the world and dismissing everything as false and some conspiracy or some secret group running the world or something like that. We can just mind our own business and continue to pay attention that I'm breathing in, breathing out. The sun came up this morning and it'll go down this evening and it'll come back up again tomorrow. So beyond the world, together with its devas, conceiving a self in what is non-self. So in this way, we bring this verse back into the dependent origination, because the Buddha is really focused in this section around the qualities of nama rupa. So nama rupa is one of the links in dependent origination. And so we should understand that the Buddha is talking about the illusory qualities of nama and rupa. You know, so let's not worry too much about what the illusory qualities of Fox News or CNN is. We are more worried about what is the illusory quality of our own nature, our own nama and rupa. So we should understand that that there is no inner core. There is no mini-me. There's no inner box. There's no black box. There's no soul. This is a process of arising of mind and of body, of nama and rupa, or what he calls here name and form. And so we conceive that name and form is something true, something that is kind of real. In whatever way we conceive nama rupa, it turns out otherwise. So when we look at it carefully, we see that nama rupa is in fact comprised of aggregates, that it is comprised of elements. For instance, the elements constitute the form, and all the different mental states, they constitute nama, they constitute the mind. So we should see that all of these different components or aggregates that come together to form the nama rupa are transitory, of a false nature. So the Buddha means here, when he talks about falsity, he talks about, he's really talking about things that are transient. They are anicca. So if something is transient, it is not permanent. So this is the element of truth that he's talking about. He's not saying is two and two, four. He's talking about the whole experience of transitoriness. So when I look at myself every day, shall we say, if I looked at myself in a mirror, and I would say, well, this is me, this is me, this is me, this is me. But I should also see that day by day by day, I'm changing. I'm getting older. You know, my hair is getting gray. I'm becoming more wrinkled or something like that. It's the same me, but it's a me that is transitory. So I should understand that the nature of me, of this nama rupa, is that it is transitory, that it is anicca. And if anything is anicca, we should also realize that it is anatta, it is without self, and it is also dukkha, it is going to have suffering at its nature. And like this is the big, you know, bad news in Buddhism, that everything in existence is suffering in nature. And that's because we keep on thinking that it is permanent and that it is not transitory. It is going to be, again, permanent, that it is controllable, that things happen according to my will, when it doesn't. So Nibbana is of a non-false nature. In English, these expressions, non-false, they come across a little bit awkwardly. So in a way, you could say it's free from falsity, or that it is a place of truth. Nibbana is a state of truth. And the noble ones know as truth. So they know the true nature of existence. They know the true nature of nama rupa, that it is aggregates, that it is a sankhara. And through that breakthrough to knowledge, hungerless, they are fully quenched. So this idea of being hungerless, free from hunger, and fully quenched means free from thirst, is free from suffering. So tanha is the cause of suffering. So the cause of suffering is craving. Craving is like hunger, or it is like thirst. And again, coming back to the etymology of tanha, then we understand that it is like the wick of the candle, and the candle is kind of thirsty for the oil, and it draws up the oil as a result. So it's, you could say, this kind of thirst for the oil that draws the oil up into the wick, and that helps the burning process of the lamp. But when we put out the lamp, when we extinguish the lamp, when we quench the lamp, we remove that oil from coming into the lamp and burning. So we are quenching its hunger. So this penetration underneath the superficial nature, the entertaining nature, the delusionary nature of the world is the goal of the yogi. And it starts, like it did with that seven-year-old this morning, of paying close attention to the actual breathing process, because, you know, this is really what is happening right now within all of our bodies. As long as we're conscious, there's a breathing process arising and passing away. And most people don't know this at all. They don't know that it is warm or cool, and how it is changing across the day, and how it's correlated or adjusting according to our emotional states and our mental states. And that we have a guide and a friend always available that is close to the truth. It is close to the real truth in the world, which is that we have the five aggregates, that the body is comprised of aggregates, and these aggregates are things like the different qualities of the elements, that it is hot, it is cold, it is heavy, it is light. And so when that seven-year-old child is breathing in and breathing out, they're having a very intimate experience of the true nature of their own body. And then that they know that how their body is, how their rupa is behaving, this is nama. Nama knows. Nama is what is bending towards the object of the body. Nama is naming those experiences. So then we start to also learn slowly but surely about the nature of the mind. So the mind can see the body, but the body doesn't see the mind. And this is a very powerful knowledge and truth. And it brings us away from falsity, like I am impermanent, I can fly, that I'm a super creature or something like that. It brings us back down to this is just this moment. I can't live in the past, I can't live in the future. I only live in the present moment. And then life becomes smooth, because we're not being lost into the world of entertainment and into fantasy. And we understand our limits. But anyway, I'll be happy to hear what Mahatero has to say. I'm sure he's tired. He's been
fighting.
Very, very busy.
I am fine, ready for fighting.
He's been very busy all weekend, but he's still ready to fight.
Still living. So that is, I would like to know that nama rupa. Human beings, they are very happy about the IT technology and the artificial intelligence. For the God, it's a foolishness. For the Brahma, it is foolishness, just like Fox News. So our whole young generation is chasing behind IT technology, chasing behind the artificial intelligence. They can't see it is how falsified. They can't see how much it is based upon the wrong things. Because it is entertaining. That is just Fox News. That's the way government annual report, bank report, everything is a fabrication. Nothing worthwhile. Doesn't mean anything to the peasant farmer. They are making a big talk. I was studying annual report, central bank. What the kind of fools, what the kind of thing bloody fellows are doing, printing money and all kind of juggleries. And ultimately what happens to the peasant farmer? They are given very nice plate, but it's just artificial intelligence. So that God can see it. Brahma can see it, I hope. So therefore, these things are the call. Whatever the Aryans can see, Putujana can't see. They are whatever they are appreciating, Aryans finds it is a bullshit, useless. But communication, with the whole world appreciating the IT technology, whole world appreciating the artificial intelligence. Sri Lanka is a very high rate. But we see for the last 70 years, countries from their own criterion itself losing. But we are happy. We are happy. Or limited people. And the second thing is, Namarupa is what you selected out of the world telling this is my Namarupa. That is the word perishing. That's what you don't have any Atma or any soul. But because you selected it, you suffer. You say this is my heap. That is undergoing differences and suffering and ourself. But selecting that, you are blind to the rest of the world. That is your foolishness. Once you select in-breath, you forget out-breath. Once you select in-breath, you forget rising and falling. Once you selected in-breath, you forget the rest of the world. Buddha is appreciating it. But you have to understand, now you are already blinded because your knowledge is to the in-breath. You know because you are doing away with all the frustration and disappointment about the world because your target is in-breath. Good. But look at the breath. Then you can see it is transient. And it is suffering. And it is no self. But the out-breath also transient. Also suffering. Also no self. But it doesn't inflict you because you have not selected at that moment. So therefore, sabbi sankhara dukkha. One has to really understand whatever you claim mine is subject to changes and that inflicts suffering. By selecting that, you are selecting, you are ignorant about the rest of the world that only inferential knowledge can bring you. By selecting in-breath, you are blind to out-breath. You are blind to rising and falling. You are blind to your sitting posture maybe, but that cannot be. That you can't understand while you are living in this sensuous world, as far as you are living in the senses. The senses have limited capacity. Whatever you select, it cut off everything others. Venerable Jnanaponika, in his Power of Mindfulness, he says, by selecting a little, you rejecting so much, you don't know. The day you understand it, your selection criterion, your boundary, your border in and out, it's utterly man-made, utterly mind-made. So then ultimately, whatever you selected, tannhaya jayati soko, whatever you claim mine is soka. Tannhaya jayati soko, pimato jayati soko. By selecting that, you reject others. That never you have been taught in the schools. They only taught in religious aspects, but the religious aspect also, they have cut off that. So they are keeping you busy. Whatever you selected, that's the curriculum. But the hidden curriculum, to cut off you from, the not to see what you have neglected. What you select, they will tell you. They will tell you, you must learn physics, chemistry, geography. And ultimately, they bring you, dragon you for a ride. And you are forgotten to the world. You are forgotten to the creatures around your world. you have forgotten the moral fear and moral shame in the world, because your mind is with the physics. So read the Tao of Physics. 30 years ago he wrote, no physics more, is lost. But still people making money out of physics, just like Fox, just like Murdoch Rupert. And we can't live without news, because that is my news line. And this that is the only one is suffering, that's the only one is changing, that is the only one in ourselves. But by selecting that, how much you are rejecting? Enormous. So toward the end of the meditation, after selecting the in-breath and understanding everything about the in-breath, then you are invited to go to the, what is, you are being covered up by the in-breath, because in-breath you know fairly, 11 facets you Buddha has mentioned, and then this is cascading to, by selecting in-breath, how much you are ignorant about the out-breath, how much you are ignorant about the in-between in-breath and out-breath. So that understanding is giving a completely new paradigm shift. And that education can't do it. Or linear education can't do it. Education is utterly misleading people. That's why Arthur Schopenhauer, read vehemently, don't read. So everything is a fabrication. Because you are losing to your present moment. Even if you go to the present moment, you understand what is your senses are telling. If you know that is what you know, then inferentially you can understand senses have their own limits. By selecting one, you are rejecting a lot. So therefore, to get rid of this paradigm or this paradox, Buddha says, learn the selected one to the utmost. And once that is finished, it is cascading to the what is being covered up by the in-breath. So whether you are starting with the in-breath, out-breath, or rising and falling, or left and right, no problem. Select it and thoroughly study all the 11 facets. Then you can understand unknown area. They never give any suffering. Pimato jayati soko, whatever you selected, that is being recognized as nama-rupa. Nama-rupa means what you selected, taken you for your lab tray. And that is what you are analyzing. But you are being cut off. It is a camouflage. It's entertainment. Because you are very worried and involved and bogged down in what you selected. That's why the teachers are doing us. And the Buddha never. Buddha says, you by selecting that, you have rejected that. The selected one also, anicca, dukkha, anatta, and darling, that's exactly the outside also, but they never inflict you because you have not selected it. So that is why the Buddha used sabbe sankhara dukkha, sabbe sankhara anicca, sabbe dhamma anatta. Whether you selected or not, they are anatta. Their anatta is not inflicting you because you have not selected this as my heap, my information. Selected heap is known as namarupa. The atuava, or commentary says, nama means inclined to that particular heap of rupa. Whereas Jnanananda says, no, only you name the selected amount of heap. The inclining, nama, namana, also has some kind of a shades of meaning, because you are very worried about your son, your daughter, your mother, your house. You are not worried about the other houses, other daughters, other sons, because you are worried. And when they die, you are worrying. But people are dying. That corona is a huge nama-rupa now. But beyond corona, other people are dying because of the other diseases. They are called statistical deaths. Usually people are dying. The statistical deaths are higher than corona. But they make big news. Huge news. And government is completely camouflaged. Talking about corona. And version is changing, vaccine is changing, so much of stories. But corona is not the main cause for the moment. And earlier there was a chikungunya and the bird flu and SARS. All they knew. But what is the most entertaining? And that is what means the Fox and the CNN. But some people says, darling, is there corona or not? People are dying. And the volcanoes are bursting. Floods are happening. Who the hell can control? What the IT can do it? They are in cycles. So therefore, to understand the big picture, you have to remove your blinkers. You have to understand, so far I was in-breath and out-breath, till I master in-breath and out-breath, and then let the blinkers open, then only you can understand by limited to my own nama-rupa, my own in-breath and out-breath. I have cut off all the frustration and tension regarding the world, but after, with understanding my nama-rupa, my breath in-breath also changing, suffering and selfless. And whatever I have not studied, whatever I have been camouflaged and cut off, also suffering. That is inferential. That inferential knowledge science can't appreciate, because science appreciates only senses can understand. This is it's a projection. This is a mystic. No, it is not a mystic. This is a relative knowledge. If this is that, that is the same thing. And that is what Einstein tried to mention, relativity theory, and he became the biggest, the best scientist for the last 100 years. But the Buddha mentioned it's 2,600 years as a very trivial thing. It is not entertaining us. Einstein is so entertaining. Isaac Newton is so entertaining. So entertainment is what Murdoch Rupert selected, and he I am so happy he has very nicely presented it. News means bending the truth. And ultimately make you can't live without news. You have to have the television, radio, music and gossips, and otherwise you can't live. That's why people are not happy to go to the forest, whose trees are not gossiping. Rivers, water flows, birds, they never gossip, just like that 7 years old child. They're talking about their things. And we can, all of a sudden, we can listen, yes. What we are talking about? We are talking IT technology. I'm always mentioning about the information technology, the intelligence, artificial intelligence. I tried my best. One of my best friends told, artificial intelligence equal to wandering mind. You won't believe. To be artificially intelligent, you must not be in the present moment. If you are in the present moment, you cannot have. If you know it is artificial, no problem. You know at that moment you are not mindful. I mean, so much so you know. And that because you have been mindful before. And later you know unmindfulness, true mindfulness. Therefore, artificial intelligence is highly entertaining. Highly entertaining, and that is somewhat, we can understand emotional literacy. Understand what is his emotion, what is his emotion. Understanding my emotion towards him and his emotion towards me, it's a kind of a reciprocal thing. Not only love affair, not only killing each other. Understanding, that's called the random act of kindness. I can feel why he's talking like that, I can feel why he's sitting like that. Because I am sitting like this because of that. And when we become elderly, when we become learned, so-called, it has become irreversible damage. Very, very difficult to reshuffle and bring it to your rejuvenation or to childlike psychology. So that's why Suzuki says, always keep the beginner's mind. Learn them, knowing it is artificial. So I used to read so much of books. And I found many books, they don't know even the Buddha appeared on the world. Bloody shit. And if you are going to say something, they say, no, it is religious. We are science. We are pure science. We are pure maths. Oh, maths is for the human. No, human maths is for maths. So that is the leading way to artificial intelligence. And the God and the Brahma, when you compare it, you can see people are artificially highly intelligent. But they don't understand or see a cockroach at home. But they know Disneyland cockroach. They don't know the cockroach in the ground. But the young child, you can't do it. They have their feeling. They are touched to the ground. I am not telling they are intelligent. I am not telling they are arahants. But we were like that. We were very innocent. We were very simple. And more you go there, we select our own nama-rupa. My subject matter specialist or special subject. And I became bogged down. I will never see through it. And therefore, I cut off everything. I know only mine. And that is also we don't know. The Buddha says, Upandita Sayadaw says, if you know the shape, if you know the manner, if you know the natural characteristic of whatever may be the selected your object, it is leading to the flux. It is leading to santati. Santati, it is beyond artificial intelligence. Santati is beyond physics, chemistry, geography and history. Santati, it's a flux. It's a galaneya. We put in Sinhala, we call goje. We are all in the same. Nothing special. Yesterday, whole day, I was in the hospital. They trapped me. And went through all the tests and kind of thing. Many people try to treat me as a monk, but I can see institute. And I went through, I told I am completely surrendering, easy for me. And they did injection or vaccine injection and my all these things. They did Bante, everything okay, but your sugar level has gone up. Then I told it is also something news, because my weight is putting up now. So 1 year, 1 month, you may just monitor it. There is no problem. I know it is artificial intelligence. I know it is complete trap. Never mind. I told no medicine can make me, no side effects can make me. The flux is happening. So many are happy because you underwent the normal tests. And I was so happy after 3-4 years, one day, sacrifice is worth. So I am not exhausted. I came back. And they wanted to see my wound. I told, don't touch it. Don't touch it. I love this wound. Because it is talking about my body. And a lot of people came. I told all the wounds gone. This is my pet, my love. It's relating my to the world. Likewise, I'm telling my information not to highlight myself, but I'm telling my nama rupa. Whenever I selected it, I make a story. That is called fabrication. All literature is nothing but fabrication. All talks are nothing but frivolous talks. Because Buddha has mentioned whatever arahants can see or Aryan can see, normal putujana cannot see. They consider it as a false. Whatever the putujana consider as the truth and tangible and concrete, Aryan laugh at it. They know it's a child play. So what is happening in the politics, when I see the international affairs, exactly the same like Sri Lanka. Different sugar coatings, different cosmetics, because they are already prepared news 20 years ago. They are not news. They are corrupted, that they are rotten. They know what to tell the next day, what to tell them. So we are waiting, telling something happening. No, everything is a flux happening. What you select as nama-rupa, I mean your subject matter, you get bogged down into that. And then fabrication happens. So your fabrication, if the other person also has the same nama-rupa, we are friends. If the other person is fabrication and the matter is different, I say, you are fool, I don't like you. Because I am not an artist, I am a scientist, I am a mathematician, so I don't like your aesthetic part. You are lowly below. I am few maths, I am science. The aesthetic people say they are fools, their mind is square, our mind is round. So they reject it. But both of them are living inside the skull. So to understand it, we have to have this kind of a brainstorming. We must have this kind of a topic. And today he mentioned it's a 15th viewpoint. When he come into the nama rupa only, Buddha says, all the whatever the truth for the Aryans is falsified for the putujana. Whatever the putujana says as this is concrete, Aryan people don't like. Because they select their nama rupa, don't think it is nama rupa of the whole world. What you selected, Matyu Sankhara, Sabbi Sankhara Dukkha. There's a one book called Storm After the Calf by Kram, by Vettamuni. He has analyzed these three verses. Sabbi Sankhara Dukkha, Sabbi Sankhara Anicca, Sabbi Dhamma Anatta. What you selected part is your Sankhara, your Tanha, Pemato. It blinds you. Don't allow you to see the world as such. Of course, we can't comprehend everything because our senses are very limited. Our vijnana is completely controlled by Sankhara. Sankhara paccha vijnana. So therefore, vijnana cannot be ethically answerable. It is only limited to Sankhara, what is put into the tray and presented. If you consider this as the world, you are a fool. This is what the whole religious leaders and the political leaders, they have the blind eyes, and what is presented is the one they are analyzing. Even the judge in the Supreme Court judge, what is presented is the one he can analyze. He's not concerned about the well-being of the being. He's concerned about the well-being of the king. He's concerned about the well-being of the who's appointing me. So therefore he can't see. So therefore Pandit Society used to say, what will happen if the old judges, they have at least first jhana? If they are just beyond the Nivaranas, I mean, they can see people are coming and wasting time so much to get the final version of the judge. They are keeping out of the world. They are not allowed to associate people. Everything is cut off and the distance. Of course, they would have started like a normal human being. But you see what the role they are running? And I am not happy that. I see, I can be a judge, no problem, but I have to go down and down to earth. And there I can select my Nama Rupa. What is the subject matter I selected? That's a predestined. You are not at fault. Your selection, but if you know it, you are beyond it. So we have to ask friends. When I am talking, I am having that kind of a ditti. I am having that kind of a viewpoint. So I can't understand it because I am already bogged down. So we have to have a discussion. And the mindfulness is the only mental concomitant Buddha mentioned. It's show that who you are. Who am I? That's the worst question in the world. And that young little girl, this is when I am meditating, this is in-breath, this is out-breath. And by understanding in-breath, out-breath, understand the sentence, we can see the child. But nice, very crispy, very... no sugar-coating, no camouflage. All the elderly people, they are talking about the Nama Rupa, they are talking about Sankhara, they are talking about Vijnana, they are talking about blah, blah, blah. But the child will never listen to that muck. But I think any learned people appreciate that child because they are very innocent. So last time in the master training program, I asked that 8-year-old child to come and explain. He was very quite a master when you keep the leg on the ground. What are the not touching parts? He's explaining. And whenever he mentioned, I told, walk on the mud and keep the leg on the A4 paper. And see how much the mud touching on the ground, that paper, and explain. He put an outer margin, and he says, Manjay, this place, not touching, I can really feel. That really I know I am mindful, because I don't feel touch. But the elderly people say, I can't feel the touching places. I can't feel the left and the right. So I am saying, so please carry on. Next life, at the age 7, you may touch it. Not only the touching area, the untouching. So Buddha also says, when you take the in-breath, you see how much it is being cut off by taking the in-breath, taking the nama-rupa, how much you are blindfolded. I mean, that part only available in the human mind. That is the evolution. Animals can't do it. But I think God can see it. Whenever the artificial intelligence comes into being, the God can see what the kind of entertainment. How much they are aloof from the day-to-day breath, day-to-day life. So therefore, this Nama Rupa, I thank Venerable Jnanananda, he put as much as possible input in the Nivanenivima, this series of talks. And there I had nothing graspable. I can't understand what he's talking about. After long time only I found, always I select my part in hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching. That part is the one going to inflict me suffering. Other parties, the majority, they are already enlightened. They are not inflicting. But we can't, because we are so bogged down, we are so entangled with what we selected. And friend can understand, hey darling, you are blind, your eyes are blindfolded. Please look at the large picture. Because he's a friend, he's not a teacher. Mindfulness also the same. After long association with the in-breath, you can understand, each time you do in-breath, you can understand it is not out-breath. It is an inferential knowledge, but it's a must. How much I cry. I can't see the in-breath, I can't see the beginning, the middle and the end, I can't see this and that. That means you will never think about, by selecting in-breath, you are rejected out-breath. There's a classic book, Venerable Jnana Ponika quoted, The Little Locksmith. One of the civil servants in India has written, that book is not available now. I got the photostat copy. She says that one selecting one girl in a life, in a world, thereafter you can't look at the other girls. Finished. Because of the bloody punishment of the looking at and selecting one girl. She will take care, don't look at. If it is so, here the divorce certificate. And one selecting one job. Remember, Dhammika told, don't do any job. You will be a slave. Any job I am called is as an enslavement. Vurthiya kambiriyama. One vurthiyak mankino kamburano ikeya. And he says, don't go behind money. And the best thing he mentioned was, don't tell others that you are meditating. I maintain it for 11 years amidst of my family members and the very close friends, and everywhere I am doing the job, I never mention that I am going to be a monk. I never mention I am sitting. So I just play fool. Because no one can understand what is happening. No one can figure it out for me. They can't trap me. I keep always open, but very difficult. Many of our meditative problem is because we claim ourselves as meditators. Then only the problem happens. Just live in the world. No one will come and tell you that you can't say that you are a meditator. Then I say, who told you I meditate? I'm not. And of course, after putting a robe, people crucifying us, that is natural. I did it after 11 years, 10 years. And that during that time, I made all the associates were lay people. And they were not becoming a monk. And they were expert in lay life. But I am beyond now. Because I became a monk, successful or not. Because they taught me, don't claim. You are just a citizen John. You are just a city biris. Just being. No problem. So therefore, Namarupa, only two points I made. Namarupa means what you selected. That is the only thing going to give suffering. So don't camouflage other parts. By selecting one, you are rejecting a lot. So never you can be comprehend everything that is separate to you. But if you know, by selecting one, this one I am rejecting so much, I know you are already enlightened. I say, oh, you are omnipotent. You are omnipresent. You have the whole knowledge. Because you know you are unknown. That is the enlightenment. So we must help each other. We must ask mindfulness to teach us how ignorant we are. How blindfolded we are because of the glare, and the when hunting you, once you focus the torch, that animal become dazzled. Am I correct? Dazzled animals, and then you can shoot. Then only you can shoot. Therefore, you must not change the torch. Then it can run. So we have been dazzled by our nama rupa. So our friend must understand, oh, Bhante, you are narrow-minded, you are this and that. And we must be open. Then only we can understand our ignorance. And I am very thankful for Venerable Jnanaponika in his power of mindfulness. Again and again he says, by selecting one, you are rejecting a lot. And that knowledge, rejecting so much, is inferential. That is called deductive knowledge or rational knowledge. And Chanki Sutta, I think, is the best for my understanding. The Buddha is explaining. You know it, this is like a benchmark, this is like a pivotal point. Keeping the theodolite here, you take the measurement everywhere. And next time also you have to come and keep the theodolite on the same benchmark. Then you have to reinforce all the information. But you are keeping the theodolite in different places, the information cannot be reinforced. So we select one benchmark, one pivotal point, one kamatana, and you have to understand by keeping that we are camouflaged to the rest. Let the mindfulness to give us through inferential and deductive knowledge, let our co-meditators to say, you are biased, you are blindfolded, you are allied, blind allied, the word you mentioned. That is what I expect from the co-meditators. That's all, sir.
Okay, so just to come back to this topic of the Buddha on truth and falsity, we should understand that that the Buddha is not is distinguishing between normal truth and ultimate truth. So in the realm of learning and how do we know anything, how do we know truth or falsity, how do we know anything? In Buddhism, we have Chittamaya Panya. Sutamaya Panya. Chittamaya Panya and Bhavamaya Panya.
Bhavanamaya. So, sometimes called Bhavanamaya. Bhava Panya. Bhavamaya Panya. Bhavanamaya Panya. That is our...
Yeah, we can add to this kind of idea. So let me explain what I mean by these things. So in Sutamaya Panya, we are looking to the suttas. We're looking to learned documents, to learned people, learned talks, to acquire knowledge. And this is essential. So when we go to school, when we learn our basics of reading and writing and so forth, we are learning it from learned teachers, and we're learning it from basic textbooks. And this is a useful, you know, way of learning things in the world. This is essential. So we can't view everything as true or false. We have to slowly learn, you know, what has been accepted by the wise, what has been accepted as the norms within a society. And this is, as Dhammajiva just mentioned, like a theodolite, where you have a reference point. We need a basic reference point. We need common agreed reality between ourselves. And we need to agree that such and such is so and so, that we have a definition, we have a meaning for a word, otherwise it becomes gibberish, where there's no meaning, there's no coherence, there's no collective understanding, there's no shared truth. So this starts with Sutamaya Panya. And then there's this Chintamaya Panya, which is, by that I mean inductive and deductive reasoning. So we have reasoning. So we definitely can distinguish between, we can say, very clever people and very stupid people, in the sense that they have the faculty to reason, maybe they are not given all the information, but they can reason, or they can deduce from the information given deeper understanding or insights. So like in the realm of natural science, this inductive deductive reasoning and Sutamaya Panya, a corpus of knowledge built up, is very, very important. And so in this way, spiritual truth and falsity, as well as sort of real truth, or sort of not ultimate truth, but just ordinary truth, mundane truth, are very similar in their modes, in how we develop. So we can see, as a human society, as a civilization, we have been acquiring and building knowledge over many, many centuries, and we've learned from our mistakes. we've learned what is successful, what is unsuccessful. So we codify these things. So for instance, in building regulations around a house, those regulations are not just sort of blind instructions or laws or things to be followed too blindly. They reflect the nature of building and what is strong, what would be weak, what will work under different kinds of seasons or different conditions. So this embodied knowledge is a very, very useful thing. So what we're talking about here with the Buddha today is referring to ultimate knowledge. So this is where the realm of Bhava Mayapanya comes into play, and the word that the Buddha is using here in this sutta to discuss what he means by truth is that it is let me get back to the Pali here. It is yata bhuta dasana. So it is in accordance with reality as it really is. So this is the expression what he means by truth. So we can have conventional truth and ultimate truth. So what the Buddha is talking about is how in when people study sciences, they are making an effort to understand things as they really are in the natural world. But as monks, we're interested in what is the real ultimate truth in terms of ultimate truth. And ultimate truth for us is relating to, using Venerable Dhammajiva's expression around the theodolite or reference point, is around suffering. So, I can be an expert in geology or chemistry or physics, and I'm not going against Buddhism or I'm not going against truth, you know, or that only monks have truth. No, I can be a geologist and know a lot about, the crystals in rocks and whatever. But that's not what is related for us around what we call ultimate truth. So ultimate truth is the nature of suffering and its cause and its end and the way leading to that end of suffering. And this is what we're really... So personally, I don't have any conflict with whatever computer scientists are doing with regards to artificial intelligence around computers. I think it's quite clever, and I think it may be beneficial in lots of ways. And you know, but it has nothing to do with ultimate truth. The same with knowing that there is a periodic table of elements. It's a very clever way of organizing these different elements that exist in the earth. And the elements that are in the periodic table are different to the elements that we talk about as monks, where we talk about earth element and air element and fire element and water element. And people will say, well, that really shows that this is not that Buddhism is wrong when they talk about elements. No, we're talking about something kind of different. We're talking about the experience of touching and feeling and walking. We're not talking about the periodic table of elements. So there can be ambiguities at times. There can be confusion around how we use language and words. And it takes a little bit of time and patience. Like I know for myself, when I first started to meet and talk with Buddhist monks and that, I really didn't know what the hell they were talking about. It was extremely confusing, and I took a lot of time and patience, and it took reading some, textbooks like what the Buddha, in the word of the Buddha, what the Buddha taught, various other basic texts, then actually reading what the Buddha said himself in translation. Because the Buddha isn't very confusing. We sometimes don't need to listen to a lot of Dhamma talks. We can actually just go and read the suttas ourselves in whatever language translation you like. So in English, Bhikkhu Bodhi is a very reliable translator. Maybe in Sinhalese, you have your own favorite translator. So we need this Sutta Mayapanya. We need this Chinta Mayapanya, where we reflect and have inductive reasoning. But above all, we need to come to Bhava Mayapanya, where we actually put forth the effort to have direct knowledge ourselves. So this, again, I view as like my career as a scientist and as an engineer. You know, you have to do experiments. You have to try things out. You have to see if this makes... Does this hit the ground? You know, these ideas that are we exchange with speech, you know, how do they interact with the world? Can I see them? Can I feel them? Can I smell them? Can I taste them? Can I touch them? Just like, again, we were talking about the child walking in the mud or feeling the contact with the ground, and also knowing those areas that are not in contact with the ground, and knowing that he knows that this part of the foot is not touching the ground. Like, this is very crispy knowledge. You know, he directly knows for himself. And it's a very nice situation where you can hear a child talking about his or her direct experience. And it sort of takes all the foolishness out of all of the talk around, you know, mindfulness and other states of mind. And we get the feeling, oh, no, this is actually to do directly with the whole experience of life itself. So then we can understand, as again, Dhammajiva uses this idea of the theodolite, you know, how we can know anything in the world, how we can have a frame of reference. And this is where we can really start to build up a sense of truth. And this truth is what we call Dhamma, that we know what we know, and we know it directly, and it is real. So real things are, in fact, the body and the mind. The body and mind really exists, but it just doesn't exist in the way that we think it exists initially. We have superficial ideas about how things exist and how they behave, but we don't know in detail because we don't actually pay enough attention. So again, coming back to my thing about the media and all of that earlier on, if you have a good sense, if you have a good knowledge of what's going on, then you can find that news entertaining, because you just see how silly it is and what they're talking about and how they don't know what they're talking about or something like that, because you have expert knowledge. So I recommend that you try to cultivate expert knowledge and mastery over some domain in your life. So then you're not fooled by foolish people, and you don't take entertainment as some sort of reality. But a lot of that in Buddhism, again, is the same thing. It's if you don't practice breathing, if you don't stay mindful of your breath, then you will every fool monk you will ever meet. And let me tell you, there are a lot of foolish monks. You know, you will go up and down many, many blind alleys, and you will hear the craziest ideas and theories and all kinds of rubbish. So you will be lost. So if you're lost in the ordinary world, you will get extra lost in the spiritual world. And if you can't distinguish an expert in the ordinary world, you will have no chance in the monastic world or spiritual world or the... And so when people get together and we have interfaith, and you have Buddhists and Christians and Muslims, and somebody will say we're all the same. No, we're not all the same. You know, it's the ultimate foolishness. We're not the same. So we are reliant upon Sama Sambuddha. We are reliant upon the arising of a Buddha to you know, initiate and start the rolling of the Dhamma. And it is our duty to take that teaching and apply it in our life so that we can know for ourselves what is ultimately true and not be swayed around by, you know, just other entertainers in the world. And we can escape from suffering, which is the ultimate truth and falsity that we navigate by in Buddhism. I think we need to finish up and...
So everything I put into under the name entertainment is I am studying. Everything is don't take seriously. So once you understand, you will understand the terminology of entertainment. But entertainment must ultimately lead to the truth also. Because only enlightened people need not to understand it. But we are in a foolish situation, so we must look into what is the reliable, what is the verifiable, what is the truth. So we don't have it. So that is the ambiguity. The best way the Buddha found is the dialogue, the discussion, sakachanugaita. So therefore, other person can find my faults rather than I find my faults. So therefore, we are having discussion. Thank you very much for the participation. Today for the discussion.